Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Reveille, reveille, donks.
Look at us now, tip to tip. This is our life. This is our passion. That's the spirit we bring to this show.
I'm Luke Thomas.
I'm Brian Campbell.
This is Morning Combat.
It is Wednesday, January 6, 2021, and it is time, donks, for Morning Combat. Today is going to be an absolutely batshit day in American history, because about a mile from where I live right now is just craziness all the way around. So let this show, Morning Combat, bring you some sanity, some regularity, some normalcy to your lives. Hello, everyone. My name is Luke Thomas. I am one half of your hosting duo. I am from CBS Sports. I am joined by the king of Connecticut, not named Apathy. He's the conspiracy to my theory, the one and only Brian Campbell, also from CBS Sports. Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Luke. Nobody wants to hear about your local BS, by the way, okay? They want to hear...
They want to rise and shine
and hear about some Japanese MMA, okay? So can we please get ready? I got some heavy reading to do, looking up these gains while you finish telling me about what the streets of D.C. are going to look like. Good God.
You got the encyclopedia, bro. That thing will change your life. I got this when I was, I think, 19 or 20 years old.
Look, please tell me you're just now realizing that I own this, please. I mean, one,
just now realizing you own this.
This is probably the third time in the last week that this book has made an appearance on screen, at some points for stretches that have extended more than a minute and a half, Luke.
Yeah, okay. I know you like to think I just look at you all show long. I don't. Sometimes I don't even have the window up to see what's happening.
I mean, wake up and smell the gross water that the hot dogs get cooked in. Please, Luke, come on now.
How are you doing otherwise, Brian, aside from dismissing the federal concerns that are happening just a couple of miles from where I live?
No, I hope you guys are all safe in there, and our country, by the way, I hope can mend itself. I'm doing great, Luke. It's a new year. You know that means no limits, okay? So every week we're just stiff arming, trying not to get fired, trying to cash these checks, trying to raise this family, trying not to go crazy from seasonal winter depression. So that's fun, you know, but we'll get through it, Luke. We're doing great. Doing great here. Shout out to my favorite hemp-infused seltzer, Kalo, by the way. Keep going. Go ahead, Luke.
Yeah. We should point out that, that Kalo probably helped you do a really great UFC 257 preview with CBS Sports' Sugar Rashad Evans. It is up on the YouTube channel right now. We should post a link to it in the description box, but it's literally the video before this one in the feed. You guys sort of talked about what would happen with the mental side of things and the implications of the division.
Yeah, it was a look at the storylines, early look at the X's and O's without really getting into what will happen. But it's a fight so big, Luke, and I think you might agree, maybe it's COVID, maybe it's the holiday season, a fight that's oddly not up at the, like, come-and-get-me level that you would expect for how big of a fight it is. That's why we wanted to get out there early and just be like, let's start banging that drum now, right? Let's bang that thing. Like, let's Def Leppard that thing. Let's bang that thing, right? Come on, man.
Does that mean bang it with one arm?
Yes. Shout out to that guy, right? Yeah.
Woo! All right. We have a lot to get to today in terms of, well, to an extent, UFC 257, but more just what's going on in the sport right now. So, please, thumbs up on the video, hit the subscribe button. Always appreciate that when you do. We also need to say, if you want to try Showtime, who makes this show possible, you certainly can. Showtime.com, get a 30-day free trial. If you like it, you may keep it. If not, you may go do something else with your life. You can get our merch, store.show. That's SHO.com. That is the best place to be for any of the merch that you like to get. Hats, shirts, mugs, tumblers, condoms for your balls, that kind of a
Seriously,
thing.
Seriously, I'm prime Masvidal with this on. I really am right now, you know?
Yeah, fair, fair. You look a little bit like it. You got the reservoir tip at the top of your hat there.
Just for
looking
a second.
Like a weirdo.
Yep, just to see how that feels up there. Before you get into the actual show, Luke, I did want to say I reached out to a villain of this here show right here, right? Jason Aaron, about the slander job you did over his music career aspirations on Monday's show.
Me? How about we?
He had not seen it up to this point. Shocker, right? Jay not knowing what's going on the show that he supposedly works on. But he said he will be back on Monday, and you better believe he will be back with a response to your continual, this is me editorializing, but your continual destruction of that man's fine character.
You were the one that put it in, have you seen this shit? I didn't do that.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious. It's pretty, I mean, have you seen it? It's pretty hilarious. You know, it's great. It's great. Yeah.
So if you haven't seen that, that's on Monday's episode. You can check that out if you want to see Jay just acting in the worst way imaginable, short of committing a crime. Yeah, you can go see that there. And then last but not least, what was I going to say? I had a point I wanted to make and now I forgot it. So, you know, couldn't have been that important, I suppose. Okay, well, with that in mind, we have a show to get to today, your fan submissions. We're going to try out a new segment, but first we have to get to a bit of news, BC. So it is now official, good sir. We now know that the next UFC show to air, which will be on the 16th of this month, which is not far away, that, of course, will be Calvin Kattar taking on Max Holloway. That will air, the main card anyway, on ABC. Now, the main card kicks off at 3 p.m. in the East, a very early time. It is believed that this is in part designed by ABC to counter-program the NFL playoffs, which is to say everyone knows the NFL playoffs are going to do well, but to the extent you can offer up some kind of alternative, there may still be enough of a spillover audience to do pretty well. BC, your thoughts on the UFC returning to network television officially?
This is huge in the look, if it was a separate one-off, it'd still be big, but I think you have rightfully muted that this doesn't mean as much in 2021. You know what I mean? Look, the UFC went nationally on Fox in 2011. So, but the whole point I think this is it kicks off this, what, four-card stand in a week and a half or 2 weeks or whatever at Fight Island, which includes Conor McGregor's return against Dustin Poirier in a monster pay-per-view rematch. So just business-wise alone, putting this, you know, the afternoon on ABC on a Saturday, it's going to be the best sort of commercial for people to buy that Conor pay-per-view, of course, but it's also a really great fight at a great time. And look, this is an old debate, especially for us old washed East Coast sports journalists who are so sick of these fights coming on. You know, forget Saturday night. How about even sometimes these Friday night fight nights coming on, you know, 11, 12, 1 a.m. main event, to see something go off early like Ryan Garcia's fight did last week, like a lot of the big UK-based Anthony Joshua boxing matches. God, is it just refreshing to see a fight on. And, you know, this main card kicks off at 3. You're probably going to see the main event right around where we saw the Ryan Garcia fight last Saturday. Everybody's awake, okay? No matter what coast you live on, it seems like, you know, at least in the U.S., everybody's ready. Everybody's near a screen. I get why you don't traditionally do this during football season, of all places. But if this is just a continuation and an extension to get outside the box in combat sports, that Saturday is everything and Saturday night is the finest window after all the football games end, when us old bastards are half asleep and the everyone else who's young is out at the club. Can we go back to where things used to be? I mean, you know, obviously in the 80s, great boxing was on. We didn't have MMA, but great boxing was on Saturday and Sunday afternoons on network TV. Big-time pay-per-views were on Monday nights, randomly. Tyson Spinks on a Monday night. You probably could get more people by your TV at that time. Maybe not against Monday Night Football, but you get the point there. So, look, this is really big just from a we're in the ESPN Disney family. They have ABC if you're the UFC. Let's extend out to there. It's crown of programming, as you mentioned. It's a lot of things. I think Max Holloway is a great sort of face to put out there. If there's anyone left who hasn't heard, you know, hasn't watched UFC since the beginning days and isn't sold on this, you get a smiley face like Max, who if gets a big win here could catapult him right back into that title picture, right to the front of the line for all we know. Everything about it seems to ring like it's a good decision, Luke.
Yeah, there's nothing. It's just hard to know what on earth could be bad about it, right? I mean, there obviously ABC at that time, you know, is that their biggest viewing window? Probably not. But given the nature of what's happening around the world in sports, I'm sure it will be a good one for them. It will be interesting to see what kind of ad revenue that they get as a consequence of this. It'll be interesting to see what kind of numbers they pull or what it does for the winner. But the thing I'm actually focusing on, BC, is less some of those things, although they are pretty critical and pretty important. But what kind of copycat or competitor effect that it might have? You know, we full disclosure, I have no idea if there are any plans, but we do work for ViacomCBS. I wonder if the ratings end up being good for this, will CBS want to leverage their previous relationship with Scott Coker in a way that they once did? I know things ended poorly with the Strikeforce Nashville card. Fair enough, it's a day that will live in MMA infamy, but there are always possibilities going forward. How much would people really hold that against them today? I don't think it would really matter in that kind of method or situation at all. So that's something to think about. More to the point, when the UFC went back to network TV through the Fox deal, right, so they had won every quarter back in that Fox deal, I honestly feel like, and I might be getting my dates wrong here, BC, so correct me if I'm missing something, but I fully believe that was part of the impetus, at least some of the early strategy that the PBC did of going to Spike TV and going to CBS, and they had a lot of different national partners. But the point being is it kind of kickboxing in the pants just a little bit to maybe go and see if there were bigger audiences and bigger networks to seek out. Will this one show do it? I don't know. But if you look at the reporting from John Aranda, the Sports Business Journal, he's saying this is definitely not a one-off. They could go back to this repeatedly or however much they want to. I tend to think that's probably going to motivate other players in the combat sports space to get a taste of what the UFC is enjoying.
Yeah, no question about that. And I just love that it's kicking off this stretch where we get this on a Saturday afternoon on primetime television. Okay, you know, it means what it means, whatever. Then we get a Wednesday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern start for that Chiesa card, and then we get the big-ass pay-per-view, and then don't we come back the next week with something big as well on Fight Island? What's that?
Yeah, I think I think this is Irish dude who's fighting. I'm not sure.
No, that is that weekend. I'm talking about don't they have a fourth one? Don't they come back right after that as well?
Oh, they might. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, UFC doesn't take any time off, right? You know, they took the least minimum amount of time during the quarantine off. This is a short little holiday break. They are coming back with a bang. So again, Dana, keep me out of your videos, but well done, sir.
Any expectations for ratings? Do you think that they'll hit like 3 million, 4 million?
No. Well, I mean, look, there's bright potential. You've got the ESPN arm to promote it on SportsCenter, like, you know, like crazy as well. But it is going against the NFL playoffs. It doesn't mean what it used to mean with streaming, right? It's not as like the old model of just some old guy sitting at home flipping through the six channels that he has. I mean, that's not there anymore, right? You know what I mean? Does anybody flip anymore? Does anybody actually flip, Luke? Is there a person left who has traditional cable that their only method is flipping through? Probably not. Everybody knows what channel they like, or they've got their favorite shows VOD'd. So what can it do? 2 to 3 million, I think that would be a plus, a solid, maybe 3.5, Luke. But, you know, it's certainly not going to do when CBS made that giant move and did, you know, Kimbo with Elite XC and did Fedor with Strikeforce and was doing, you know, 6-7 million on a Saturday night. And you're just like, holy crap. It was a different era and setup for network television back then.
By the way, on that card, just to remind folks, it's Holloway versus Cater, Omari Akhmedov taking on Tom Breeze, Carlos Felipe versus Justin Taffa, Nick Lentz taking on Mike Grundy, and then David Zawada versus Ramazan Amiev. Like the biggest names ever for, by the way, Wikipedia is calling it UFC on ABC1. Just sort of consider that. And then,
yeah, Wikipedia still calls it like UFC on Fuel 38. Like, they don't care. But it's either a pay-per-view or it's a UFC fight night where I come from. But that is the drizzling shits short of that main event. I mean, come on, Luke. Try to get me fired up for Akhmedov coming off a Weidman loss. Please, come on here. What are we going to do with this?
Yeah, I mean, there are some other interesting bouts. You might get Ricky Simone on that one. It was supposed to be against Boom Kelleher, but he got COVID. However, you do have the return of Joaquin Buckley taking on Alessio Di Carrico. That should be interesting.
Hey, Phil, put that Hawes in the co-main, dude. But seriously, put that up in the damn co-main.
Or the other one. They got Santiago Ponzinibbio back after 2 years taking on the Li Jing Lang. I'm a little surprised that that's not a little bit higher, given that like Felipe versus Justin Taffa, but it's a heavyweight contest, so maybe they're hoping they'll just gas out and knock each other the fuck out. Who knows? But yeah, not the best card ever, to be clear, unfortunately.
Yeah. Luke, well, real quick on this whole idea of, I mean, look, it's 2021. The whole idea of UFC going mainstream. I mean, look, the Fox deal in 2011 was a massive step forward, right? They're on the heels of the Brock Lesnar pay-per-view run. And, you know, ESPN had MMA Live, which became an actual TV show and was going to fight. So that was a point of legitimization that was a major step. And it was all part of Dana. You know, his mission statement back then was like, UFC is going to be one of the four majors, right? It's going to kick NASCAR to the curb and kick the NHL to the curb, and it's going to be NBA, NFL, you know, and college football, baseball, and the UFC. To his credit, he's gotten as close as he possibly could. I mean, you know, just the ESPN TV deal in general, LT, is pretty damn massive. Is there another hill to climb? Like, what makes a guy like Dana successful is he can't sleep, right? He's always looking to expand in China or you know, do anything to keep UFC going. But is there anything left in this whole sphere of, like, mainstream commercialization that would make you go, wow, that the UFC could do?
The answer is yes, but not with this card. I mean, the UFC is going to be going up against the divisional round of the playoffs. Yes, so there'll be four games that weekend, two on Saturday, two on Sunday. I mean, basically, those will decide who goes to the conference championships, and then from there, the Super Bowl, right? So at that point, you're dealing with some of the very best product that the NFL has to offer. This main event between Holloway and Cater certainly would fall along those lines, but in general, this product is not. To me, to really get a sense of, like, what is possible, how far could you push this relationship, you'd have to have the UFC approximating something much closer to their more premier end of their product. And again, the main event certainly is that, but overall it's not.
All right, let me interrupt you and just ask you this then. They would never do this, right? Never. But let's say they announced Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier was going to air on ABC at 8 p.m. Eastern on Saturday night, January 23rd. Could that do 10 to 15 million views? Like, could it be so astronomical that they could say, we are the number three sport in the U.S.? You know, we have cracked that core. It's not just college football, NFL, NBA, and everybody else. We are there. Could they do that? Like, what would Connor Dustin 2 on free freaking TV in primetime do for ratings? Luke, what would be the damn number? Tell me right now.
Promoted properly, right? So you had a big lead in time. You know, maybe you had fans in attendance, right? We're talking about, like, so there's the vaccine has been, at that point, widely distributed. So you have media in attendance for the buildup. You did a press tour, right? That kind of a thing. I honestly feel like 20 million would be underselling it. I really feel like you could do what a big NFL game could do. Not 40 million. I think that seems a little bit too much. But 20 to 30 million? Yes, I think you could do that. I really absolutely do. If you had a premier product promoted properly, and part of that promotion is not just selling the fight, right? Like, Dustin's going to fight McGregor, but saying Conor McGregor is going to fight for free on network television. You do not have to pay for it. You just got to find a TV set or a phone or a tablet. That's it. Gratis, no charge, all yours. That is such a selling point. You would get so many people who are, you know, they look up McGregor results or they buy the occasional McGregor pay-per-view. You would get them tuning in a way that they wouldn't ordinarily do. I really think people don't have nearly enough imagination about what that... We don't really know what the very premier side of the sport draws. We've put championships on there. We put some big fights on there, but we've never put championships with big marquee pay-per-view selling names in any kind of real demonstrable way when they were at the peak of their earning potential.
I mean, I
think it'd be huge.
You give Dana and them credit in 2011 when they did put the heavyweight championship on national television. I mean, that was a ballsy move, although JDS and Kane, you know, not household names at that point, but still a big move. It would never happen with Conor in, like, a real big fight. You always wonder, though, whether it's Conor or the Floyd Mayweather business, if anyone would take that gamble on a softer fight, because Floyd Mayweather's last fight of his original Showtime deal, they had talked for the Andre Berto fight that ended 2015. It was the fight after the Pacquiao fight. Steven Espinosa said on this show, even, there were talks for a short season of putting that on big CBS. I mean, that could have been you know, freaking massive, even though it's a one-sided fight on paper and it played out that way, you know, when the fight actually happened. So, you know, you just always want, it would never happen because there's too much money to be made. I just always wonder, could Conor versus anybody do 10 million views on a Saturday? You wonder.
Oh, I absolutely think he could. Again, under the right circumstances, you start playing with that formula a little bit and the numbers drop off pretty substantially, but the right promotion, right time, right opponent, the right kind of promotion, it would absolutely fucking slay. So, to be clear about that. All right. So it was also made official for that third paper, excuse me, for the third card on this month from Fight Island, UFC 257, you're going to get Michael Chandler taking on Dan Hooker. It is now official, BC. A lot of different questions to ask about this, but the one I want to go to first is, let us imagine a world, and I don't know what's going to happen, but you know, chaos certainly seems like a fair assessment and a fair bet. But let's imagine a world where Michael Chandler goes in there and loses. And let's say loses like in the way that Dan Hooker puts away opponents. Maybe it's competitive for a time, but he gets finished. What would that do for the career of Michael Chandler? How bad would it hurt him?
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
You know, there's levels to losing. So if he got starched, it would look bad. It would look like... I mean, look, when Eddie Alvarez came in as the big deal from Bellator, he lost a competitive fight with Cowboy. Like, you know, but it wasn't a disaster. If Chandler comes in there, big guns, big balls, I mean, he's talking about beating Hooker so badly that he could convince Habib to come, you know, to not retire to fight him. Yeah, it would look bad if he got starched. But anything short of that, Luke, an action loss, a competitive loss, he's going to be fine. In fact, this is in play. Let me tell you something that's in play. We did an exercise on CBSSports.com, something that you hate, Luke. Good God, do you hate this type of thing? Making bold predictions for the damn new year.
It's not, you know, even just bold, like, predictions. It's just masturbating the audience.
Just shooting okay. From the hip, right? Shaking up that champagne bottle with Adesanya and just, you know, I mean, just doing that thing. And I'm like, you know what's a bold prediction? The great Michael Chandler could come in guns blazing to the UFC in 2021 and lose two fights in a row and still, you know, be considered great. It's just that we're in a killer lightweight era. It's in play that he could lose to Dan Hooker. Let's say he rebounded against anybody in the back half of that top 10. It's in play he could lose that fight. I mean, look, match him up against a Kevin Lee, a Paul Felder, any of those type of guys. You're like, it's a good-ass fight. I got to see it. So the whole point is, short of just getting dominated, he's going to be fine. It's more about the debate of the top end. How much will Dana and company look to give him the world if he comes in there and beats Dan frickin' Hooker in his UFC debut? Does he cut the line in front of Gaethje and Oliveira? I mean, how far do they want to push this guy knowing they're going to have a short window of really fun action fights? And he's a great fighter. He's a great dude. We've never really seen Dana like overly push the guys who came over from Bellator. I mean, look, Eddie Alvarez got every opportunity and he cashed in those opportunities. But, you know, they gave him a pretty big fight here to kick off. So I think it's more about where can he go if he wins. If he loses and it's a fun fight, he's not going to go that far, Luke, right? It didn't kill Eddie.
I think there's actually a possibility where he could lose and his stock might even go up, which is to say, stock in terms of are you the best at lightweight would take a hit no matter what if he lost to, you know, again, not some controversial decision, but like a fair way to say that, you know, Dan Hooker won. Yes, I mean, his stock in that sense would take a hit. But if he goes out there and this is very much, you know, I don't think that this is likely, but if he has a kind of, I'm going to say, you know, a version of Lawler versus Condit, you know, where it's just, I'm talking balls to the wall action. These two guys are trying to kill each other for the duration of the contest. This one will be 3 rounds, not 5. You might say to yourself, Jesus Christ, like this dude is just going for it. I mean, we knew he did that before, but maybe in different ways than he even did, because even against Benson Henderson the first time, he went balls out, but then, you know, had to really resort to the wrestling. If he doesn't do that, if he just goes out there and just absolutely bludgeons the guy and gets bludgeoned in the process, you know, the UFC staff might say, okay, well, maybe he's not the best lightweight on earth, but we got to get this guy back in there. We got to get this guy in rotation. He is exactly the kind of thing we're looking for. So I actually think that there is a way where there are real, I think, plausible scenarios where a loss, for Michael Chandler is not in anywhere even close to the end of the world. To your point, though, what would be a bad thing is if he goes in there and gets outclassed. I think that's the part where you're trying to say, okay, getting finished by Dan Hooker is not the end of the world. It doesn't ruin your career. Gilbert Burns got finished by Dan Hooker, but Gilbert Burns was younger and moved up a weight class and just got a lot better. You don't really see those opportunities possible for somebody like Michael Chandler. At this point, at age 34, if you get outclassed, even for Eddie Alvarez losing to Don Cerrone, you have much less opportunity to repair the damage that could come as a consequence, particularly if you are measured and careful and you throw your best weapons at them and they don't work. If you throw your best weapons at Dan Hooker and they work pretty well, but not enough in the end because Dan Hooker's, a very special talent, I don't think it's that big a deal. But if you actually try to beat this guy and you look poor in the process, that would be very, very, very bad for him.
Well, let me
and
ask
I think
you
it would
comparison.
Damage his stock considerably.
Because I'm sorry for cutting you. People think all I do now is cut you off. Remember when back in the days when people used to get mad that you would cut me off, Luke? One day I'm just going to cut you. How about that? One day I'll sever the artery.
Just to help the audience understand, we're trying to talk to each other through Zoom, and it's hard to sometimes hear or stop. It's not like normal conversation, but
you don't get conversational cues. Look, obviously it could go disastrous. Will Brooks, great Bellator champion. Disastrous UFC run. But do you remember what do you remember two scenarios? One, when Eddie came over and lost to Cowboy, and two, when Anthony Pettis, coming off of that Benson Henderson fight, went from WEC to UFC, and I'm thinking this guy's gonna freaking start printing the Wheaties box. In fact, screw Wheaties. Let's get a good ad. Let's put him on the Boo Berry or some shit. Let's put on something that actually tastes good. And then he lost to the damn Carpenter, right? In either situation, the Guida loss for Pettis or Alvarez, do you remember thinking that their stock got destroyed or just, oh man, it's a tough loss and a tough fight?
I don't know. Why don't you answer it for me? I don't know.
I remember just being like, oh, that sucks. I thought this guy was going to win a title, but he fought well. He fought hard. Let's see him again. So obviously, Chandler, I think, is an even... Well, I don't want to say a much bigger action fight potential than those two names. Anthony Pettis and Eddie Alvarez both bring the freaking action. But yes, you're right. He could lose twice and be the new Justin Gaethje for the UFC, the new shiny toy that you throw in there and you make fun action fights. You never know. We'll see. So, yeah, there's a lot to gain here, win or lose for Chandler. And I'm loving, Luke, the Dan Hooker quotes. Did you see that specific quote that he gave to some Australian podcast where he said,
no,
you're going to give me the new toy? I'm going to break the new toy real quick. He says, Luke, it's a horrible style matchup for Chandler, and Hooker believes he'll need less than 5 minutes to break him. I love when people talk tough, all right? I love that shit.
Yeah, we should talk about what it means for Dan Hooker. So, and by the way, we'll do the reverse of this as time gets closer, but it is worth sort of assessing, BC. What if Dan Hooker goes in there and, A, has a great action fight and wins, or, B, just looks dominant, like the kind of Hooker that beat, let's say, a Gilbert Burns. Again, that version anyway. Of Gilbert Burns, dude, would he skip the line? Would he get a title shot? Would they want to have a situation where you have Adesanya, maybe with one, two belts possibly, and then another guy from that region plus Volkanovski? I mean, can you imagine what it would mean for that gym, for that region? There's massive implications there for a guy like Dan Hooker.
Yeah, massive implications. And anyone here who's ready to print you a CKB t-shirt, I'm sorry, I'm with you. I think Adesanya's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I think Dan Hooker's right behind him, even though he gets into a little bit too willing to get into wars. Luke, does your CKB hard-on go all the way down the roster to, like, Kai Kara France? I mean, where does your infatuation end with that club?
It's not that I think that they're the best club on earth. It's that I think that the guy who runs the club is one of the sharpest minds on earth. Adesanya is the very best version of what they have to offer, and then it goes down from there. But, do I have respect for Kai Kara France? Yes. So I think he's the best flyweight in the world? No. I don't think there's evidence to conclude that. But I'm curious to see what Brad Riddell can do. I mean, he's one of the more experienced and credentialed kickboxers in the entire UFC. So I'll be curious to see what he can do. Shane Young, I think, is a good talent. But it's not that everyone there is Adesanya. It's that the guy running it, I don't think people realize how smart he is. And if he lived in the United States and could just recruit from, the vast amount of people that were here, I honestly think he would be, if not the preeminent MMA coach, something pretty goddamn close to it.
You know, it would be really fun if we got Eugene Berriman and your brother, Matt Thomas, together. We only used your brother to make those burgers with like the steak inside of it. And then maybe to pass around the peace pipe. And then we just picked Eugene's brainstem, right? That'd be a fun night at the office, Luke. Okay?
That would be a fun night. You know, my brother would not be good for the conversation. I told you this, my brother got, I think, his PhD in math, and he graduated recently, didn't tell us, didn't know, and actually was so good in his, he went to University of Virginia for all of his schooling, was so good, he won some kind of award for like outstanding accomplishment in math, and literally did not, I had to find out about this from my dad. My dad was like, hey, you know, Matt graduated, got his blah, blah, blah. I won this award. And I was like, I'm sorry, when? Like, oh, yeah, like 2 weeks ago. I was like, dude, your DMs never stood a chance with that guy.
What do you think would happen sooner? Matt Thomas respond to my DMs giving me dirt on you, or Rob Thomas? It's not 3 a.m. because that guy'd be up pissing if it was. So he must be lonely watching this show.
Wow. What will happen first? The desert will be flooded or the Arctic will be full of sand?
Yeah. Well, either way, Luke, Hooker Chandler, fantastic fight. And if Hooker, this might be the biggest win by a hooker since the plotline to Pretty Woman, right?
Hey-o! Cut it out, Dad. Okay.
Okay, yeah. It'd probably be the closest the hooker got to the UFC title since that time in Dana's office, right?
Hey, cut it out, baby.
I got more, bro. All right.
Last question. What is better for the lightweight division, for Michael Chandler to win or Dan Hooker? That's a tougher question to answer.
I don't think there's a wrong result here, right? But I do think that, to steal a term from, okay, upper bound limits is a Luke Thomas term. Dan Hooker has a higher upper bound limit to win the UFC lightweight title, I believe, than Michael Chandler does. But Michael Chandler has a much higher upper bound limit. God, that's so weird to use your terms. To be an action star.
Did you never take calculus?
I'm from a factory town. So did I sit in the class? Was there a textbook? Yes.
Listen, Luke, okay. Jaime Escalante taught fucking calculus to all the burros in South Central L.A. If they can learn calculus there, certainly you could learn calculus in Connecticut, no?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was from a very armpit area of Connecticut, though, okay? Like the grunt workers of the state holding it together.
I don't actually believe that, but okay.
Come with me, okay? In fact, we'll bring the cameras. It'll be part two of our dongumentary. Luke, what I was saying was, you know, damn it if I remember. No, Chandler's got a higher ceiling as a B-side to a pay-per-view. True or false? Obviously, right? I mean, Chandler's an action star. He's good-looking, dude. Like, there's, you know.
Yeah, I think that's true, yeah.
So that would make it, if you want to do this question, better for the UFC if Chandler won. Yeah, because, I mean, is Chandler Gaethje and Chandler Connor and Chandler Tony bigger fights than Hooker in those spots? Yes, they're bigger fights, Luke. And that's the whole point of who's it better for.
I would say that it's impossible to go wrong either way. I think you would probably agree. It doesn't really matter who wins. UFC is going to have a great situation on their hands. I do wonder, like, on some level, they probably want a balance. They probably want a fair number of American champions that they can take around to American media outlets that the American media could get familiar with. And on the other hand, I bet that they also, or English-speaking certainly, if they're going to be international, right? So how many do we have that are local? How many do we have that are international? Because they want to be able to brag about both. And does Hooker fit into those plans? Obviously, Adesanya fits into those plans in a pretty major way. They're going to give the guy an opportunity to leapfrog the division and get a title shot in a division above his. Does Hooker meaningfully add to that? I tend to think that he might, but I don't know what the UFC has in mind. But it's always something to think about, is what kind of balance do they want with elite championship level fighters between international and then homegrown, and where they all fit in. It'll be interesting to see. All right, point number three here, BC. I do not know what the UFC has against Leon Edwards. So we all know that that fight is off. We talked about it on Monday. The Leon Edwards fight with Khamzat Chimaev, who apparently is now boys with Ramzan Kadyrov, which is a whole other story. But
we is know it really, though, Luke, or can we separate the art from the artist and let people befriend or vote for whoever they want, Luke, okay?
Here's the thing on that. This is what MMA fans love, right? They love the ambiguity enough to give exoneration. They never love ambiguity for anything other than exoneration. And not just MMA fans, I should say the MMA community in general, right? Because there's media guys who do the exact same thing, which is to say, do we really know if Ramzan Kadyrov is actually boys with the people that he forces to have dinner with him or asks to have dinner with him? Are they like-minded folks? Or are they just doing it because they don't want to die? And no one really ever knows the answer to those kinds of things. It's very, very hard to tell. I suspect a fair number of them don't actually want to do it. But because they live in this gray, this moral gray where it's like, well, we don't know, but they're probably doing it on some level for self-preservation, but maybe not. Oh, well, you know what? Let's just decide that that means that they're probably doing it just for self-preservation rather than coming to any other conclusion about their moral culpability here. And I don't know why that's the default. I don't know why we always have to say, well, because it's plausible that they just want to do this for self-preservation, it must mean, therefore, they're doing it for self-preservation. We actually don't know that either. And I don't know why the reflex is the one that's more charitable, but okay.
I think to the extent that, again, another Luke Thomas forced phrase, people are just upset that you put qualifiers upon your MMA analysis. You'll be like, Kay Hansen, rising prospect in, good God, shitty conspiracy DMs or something. You know, like, no, it's like, no, is she a rising prospect or not, Luke? I don't want to hear who she voted for. I mean, look.
I do that on my breakdowns. I don't really get into any of the other stuff on my breakdowns. But on these shows that are about the wider perspective of sports, it's fucking malpractice to not mention it. Every time, all the time? No. But enough that it matters? Yes.
Okay, Luke. People have...
And also, those people can suck my balls. I mean, let's just be real about it. They don't know what they're talking about.
Wow, Luke, you know, some people have friends in low places, you know?
By the way, you mentioned Adesanya jacking off with that champagne thing that you showed on Monday. Remember I was talking about the dude, the white dude in the back who had hit Adesanya's belt and was like cheering him on as... That dude DM'd me. Did I tell you that?
No, I love this story.
Here, he DM'd me the other day. Who showed him the video? I don't know. I don't know. He didn't tell me how he got wind of it. But here's what he wrote me. I thought this was actually pretty funny. His name is Joey. I don't know what his last name is. He goes, let's be honest, bruv. If you watched Izzy jack off, you'd be hyped too. Smiling emoji, laughing emoji, water shooting emoji.
You know, sadly, Luke, I bet a dissected video would follow that experience. Yes, I do.
Can I say he's wrong, BC? I cannot say he's wrong.
Look, you know, you can't pick who you love, right? I mean, did I wake up one day and say, I'm going to be the biggest advocate for Kevin Lee one day winning a UFC title? I didn't plan it, Luke, okay? He planned that head tat. I didn't plan this, but I'm going to go down with that ship if I have to because, you know, he's got that talent. I'm a big Joanna fan, trying to stay away from the IG. Hopefully one day in 2021, you and her can do. You know, Luke, how mad would you be? If I, like, because you think I, Osama bin sabotage you constantly, okay? How mad would you be if I was like, hey, Luke, just guess what? I just secured a big-ass interview. And you were like, oh, who? And I'm like, Dan Hooker. I got Dan Hooker on Thursday, 3 o'clock. You want to join me on this street? You're like, yeah, brother, yeah. And then we get on, and you already go there. I'm like, Luke, so sorry. Dan couldn't make it. But good news, I got Joanna. Here she is. Bam. How mad would you be?
I'd be mad, not less because, one, I don't have anything to say to her, and two, why would you be dishonest with me? Why couldn't you just be honest and be like, yo, we should do a Joanna interview together? You know what I mean? Like, pitch me on it if you want me to do it. Like, just be a man about it.
Oh, wow. Be a man, Hogan. Okay. All right. I'm down with that.
I'm 40. I'm a man. Come at me.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah, thank you. Mike Gundy, thank you. All right. I would never trap you like that. Luke, all of my bits are all good-natured, okay? Please, tell that to JMMA. They're all good-natured, okay? Please.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I like them. I mean, you know, either we'll do things or we won't, but we're honest about what we're doing here. All right, so Leon Edwards is obviously his fight with Khamzat Chimaev been replaced by Magny versus Chiesa. We talked about the latter of those two fights, one's a theoretical, one's going to happen, and how much we liked it, and sort of broke it down. But Leon Edwards, BC, said something kind of interesting, which is that, quote, I offered to fight Neil or Chiesa in the main event January 20th and Chimaev straight after, but the UFC decided against it. Edwards said this on an Instagram post. Why would the UFC decide against it?
The lack of context here makes it too easy to continue the narrative that Leon Edwards can never get ahead. Why does UFC hate him? You know, is his given name Loretta Hahn Edwards? Like, what the hell's going on here? Sorry, Brian Campbell Edwards. What the hell's going on here? But I think that we need to know the full context. Did they turn it down because they love the Khamzat Chimaev fight even more? Do they look at Chimaev as their next big, giant, big thing, and they think going through Leon Edwards with an 8-fight win streak is the best way to legitimize that guy while getting rid of a fighter they don't want to market? Could be. It also could be they're thinking, you know, we do want to make Masvidal Covington this spring, but if we can't make it, we might as well do Masvidal Edwards before Edwards stops being a thing. They did have that backstage fight over the three-piece. So maybe it's good news like that, Luke, and maybe it's not like, nope, F you, right?
Yeah, the lack of context. We don't have the UFC side of things. Here's my best guess on this, BC, and it's just that, a guess, is that because Chimaev is out, not because he tore an ACL or whatever, but because it's COVID, and they can usually get a quick turnaround again to get them back into action once they've had COVID. Not all the time, but there tends to be a fairly quick-ish rebooking process when one of the competitors gets COVID. My thought is they still want to hold on to it for the reasons that they made it, because there's going to be a quick turnaround. Now, I don't know if that's actually accurate, if they're going to do it, when that's going to be. Here's what I would say. If that is the reason, right, they still like the fight, they can make it in reasonably short order, let's keep things as they are, okay, I understand that, but one, I think Edwards should be financially compensated to at least some degree, and then two, if that falls out for any reason, unrelated to anything due to Edwards, they have got, at that point, to put him on a card, frankly, against almost anyone at that point. You can't keep delaying. This guy hasn't fought since, what, July of 2019, in many ways, by no fault of his own, which we've been over a million times. I just think if you're going to keep delaying him and you have the best reason is that it's just a very minor delay in the grand scheme of things, okay. But if that falls through, at that point, all bets are off. You got to take care of the guy. And I think that's pretty reasonable.
You could argue, I'm not in the business of protecting the UFC's interest, that if they didn't care about him, they would let him fight in this main event at 9 a.m. Eastern on a Wednesday morning against a difficult style matchup in either guy and just hope that he loses quietly, right? So you'd have to believe that there's better news coming, Luke.
You would imagine. You would imagine that they're trying to roll all that out. Dana White did a Q&A yesterday talking about how Francis versus Stipe 2 is tentatively set for April. He also sort of hinted about some other fights that they were working on. So we'll see. I mean, there's no way to really to know this. We're just dealing with too little amount of information. But I just feel like it's like, dude, at some point you got to get the guy back in there. You just make it happen.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the things that we know is now rebooked is UFC 258, February 13th, Kamaru Usman taking on Gilbert Burns. Okay. BC, true or false? It is much better for the welterweight division and the potential matchups that it sets up for Kamaru Usman to retain his title on the 13th of February.
Yeah, much better. I mean, maybe because he had such a great fight with Covington and there's a built-in war there and, you know, he beat Masvidal in on short notice circumstances. What if they did a full camp? Maybe there's better stories to tell and they've already invested enough in Usman and he's, you know, lived up to expectations each time they've made a larger investment. Yeah, business-wise, probably a little bit better for them, but he's not a giant, massive star, and I'm really interested in Gilbert Burns' chances in this fight. God, this is going to be a great fight. Luke, this calendar year is going to be freaking insane in the UFC. I mean, every 2 weeks, we got a great fight. Sometimes we got really big fights. Sometimes we got really big fights that are also great fights. This is just a great-ass fight. I'm glad it's happening. I'm glad Burns didn't lose a spot in the line. Better for Usman. Dude, Usman, it's funny. We did, you know, the typical predictions that you hate also of, you know, who's going to close the year as champion. Even though this fight's really hard, and you can make many a case for Gilbert Burns to win it, and I may end up making that case when the time comes, I feel more confident about Usman ending the year as champion in his division than I do most other champions. So this guy's rising. I don't think we've seen the best of him yet. I think that little tease we saw of the wrinkles he added with Trevor Whitman for that Masvidal fight, it's only going to get better.
I mean, let's just sort of go through the matchups. So let's say Usman wins, and again, in a way that's not controversial, whatever that means. The rightful winner was Usman. He gets his hand raised. Okay, now what do you have? You have Usman versus Colby 2 that you could do. You have Usman versus Jorge 2. I don't think you could go right to it, but you could. It's certainly somewhere down there in play, right? Those would be your top two choices at that point. If Gilbert wins, you have a fresh set of matchups at that point because you could do Gilbert versus Colby. You could do Gilbert versus Jorge. You could do Gilbert versus Kamaru too if you wanted there to be some kind of a rematch at that point. Let me pull up the rankings to see what else is up there. You could
You're forgetting the idea that if Khamzat Chimaev beats Leon Edwards and does so in the fashion that he has been doing, you're not going to keep him out of a title fight in 2021, Luke. You're not going to do it. You're not. You personally, you're not going to do it.
That's probably true because Leon Edwards is currently sitting at 3, but you have Wonderboy at 5. And from there, no one's really in title contention because 6 is Woodley, 7 Maya, 8 Chiesa. We'll see what happens with him and Magny sitting at 9 and Vicente Luque at 10. But still, those guys are still they're fresh rising contenders, but they're not in title contention just yet. Still, I feel like you get brand new, fresher matchups with Gilbert, but I think you get more lucrative fights by doing it with Kamaru. Like of all the permutations I mentioned, BC, what fight from a commercial standpoint, and I'm not saying it's a blockbuster, but what fight is bigger than Kamaru versus Colby 2?
Kamaru versus Jorge 2.
Oh, sorry, what am I saying? Colby versus Jorge, but that's not for the title. I'm talking about if Gilbert wins or Kamaru wins, right? So one of them has to be in it. What is a bigger fight?
For Kamaru, if is that what
I'm saying? No. From a pay-per-view standpoint, which one is a bigger main event than that?
Jorge.
Jorge too. Okay, yes, but I mean he just lost. You can't go right.
He's
got to
come back and beat somebody, which is kind of why maybe they should throw Leon Edwards at him and just cash that in. I'm not saying that's an easy fight for Jorge. Mm. I'm saying there's a built-in storyline. We have to see it. If Jorge wins, dude, you're back to banging that drum to get him back into there. You know what I'm saying? We're back to doing that, all right? Yeah, man.
Do you want to see the UFC make Jorge versus Colby independent of any kind of title?
Yeah, I would love that fight. But I don't think they have to force that. But when I say force, I mean you want both of those guys to potentially be Kamaru Usman's B-sides in 2021 after the Gilbert fight. If Kamaru's going to fight three times this year, you kind of want the second to be against Colby, the third against Jorge, right? So I don't know if you have to have them against each other right away. Now, typically UFC matchmaking, they will fight each other because they always tend to circle around and make the best fight the best. But if you were trying to keep both of their brands alive, there are competitors in this sphere from Stephen Thompson to Leon Edwards that you can match people up against.
Sure. You're right. It'd be interesting what happens to Khamzat Chimaev, dude. If he goes in there and beats the brakes off Edwards, which, you know, I'm not declaring to you is likely or inevitable. I don't know, but let's say he does. Dude, for sure he's getting a title shot after that. Edwards is sitting at 3. Your top contenders are Kamaru, who's unranked. 1 is Colby, 2 is Gilbert. Would they bypass Colby to give Chimaev a title shot? Yes. Yeah, they absolutely would do that, right? I mean, is there any doubt in your mind they would do that?
No, they would do that. I'm more interested if we can get a loser leaves town Final Four bracket going with Lawler Woodley 2 on one side, Matt Brown and Condit on the other. Winners face off, all losers retire. You into that?
You're a bad person. You're a bad person. Yes, is the answer. I'm into that. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Oh, there it is. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Last
Same
but not
decision
least.
Making I make in front of the rollers at Cumberland Farms. You know, like, nope, can't, nope, won't do it. Yeah, yep, I'll take 3 of them.
Thank you. You know what? I'll just have the, just give me the fucking store. I'm going to buy the store. Yeah. All right. Last but not least, I didn't think much of this. People seem to think that there's a whole lot to this. I don't. But, okay, maybe your mileage will vary. Dana White was, you know, characteristically going after people in his comments because somebody had written through some, you know, clownpenis.fart, 78934 on Instagram, wrote that they could not wait to pirate UFC 257. To which Dana responded, "Can't wait." Dana responded with, "And I can't wait to catch you. I'm going to translate the English here. I have a surprise for you motherfuckers this year." BC, what is his surprise?
Well, I was thinking there's a few different things. One could be a 4-minute hit job video showing all of their faces, Luke, right? To just say, like, all these people tried to come against my business. Two, I don't know. If anyone's going to lead the charge on figuring out how to try to, in any form, stop piracy, which seems like it seems as losing of a battle as trying to stop performance-enhancing drugs, right? Your whole drug testing debate. To me, it's one and the same. I feel like the abusers are going to be ahead of the people trying to shut them down. From as easy as just taking a like Periscope and putting it to your TV and people watching it. I mean, look, people are going to find it on the damn dark web. But if anyone's going to be ahead of the game at doling out some serious fines and or arrests and really spending the money to police it, it's obviously Dana White and company. So it's interesting to see how far they will attempt to go. I don't think he just does a veiled threat there without some plan in place. Interesting, DAZN is now shutting down anyone, Luke, who put out any form of video on Twitter from the Ryan Garcia, not only the knockout and the win, but they banned my video of Kate Abdo making that sperm joke. In fact, my Twitter account was shut down for a few hours the other day because DAZN/Perform Group went after me. So maybe Dana has new weapons in his arsenal to try to stop this. Or, maybe he's got a new reality show. Dana White found a fight where him, Matt Serra, and Dean Thomas knock on the doors of all the people who were caught in piracy, and maybe they beat their ass right there or bring them to a top of a cliff and take their shirt off and refuse to jump. Either or, Luke, it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, people were asking me. I had people emailing me like, oh, is this one of those new pieces of legislation that passed with the stimulus bill? Where if you guys have been paying attention, it made illegal streaming in certain cases a potential felony, 10 years in prison, a whole lot of stuff could go wrong for you. But if you actually read the legislation there, it's designed for people who are actually broadcasting the streams, not for individual users who might be consuming it. People calling me in the middle of my show. So no, I don't think it has anything to do with them. Are there better tools now to detect piracy than there used to be on various forms of social media or the web? I'm sure that is the answer. But this brings up a bigger question to me, BC. And let me see what you think about this. You mentioned the doping debate, which is kind of funny because I actually have views. I didn't really connect them in this way, but now that you mentioned it, I think I should. Where is there some level of piracy that's, if not good, you should just leave alone? Let me make the case for just a second. I'm not sure that the answer is yes. It might just be yes by virtue of just the way the world works. But here's how I think about it. If everybody pirated, that would just be totally untenable, right? I mean, there's no way a business could survive, and it would just, you know, mass illegal behavior would just not be right, right? So that's not okay. On the other hand, what if there was zero piracy? I mean, absolutely not one person able to get something that they did not pay for. To me, you'd be excluding probably a lot of fans because we know, not a lot of fans, but enough of a portion of a fan base where it's very expensive to be a fan from enjoying your content, which is to say, is there a small but relevant segment of fans where the extra mile you have to go to police them is A, expensive for your business, B, even if you caught them all, you wouldn't meaningfully change your business fortunes, and C, they're still fans and they get to enjoy your product. Yes, it's illegal. Yes, this is not a thing you would want to extend beyond a very small and manageable group. But in that narrow scope, is piracy okay?
No, I don't think it is. I get the point you're trying to make. So you're saying if I got a fast food restaurant and I know people are stealing some of the items, but hey, it's good. At least they'll eat it and tell their friends it's good and come back and buy it again. I don't see where that's a plus. If you want to make the argument against cracking down,
you're going to make the comparison between one brick and mortar fast food restaurant,
yes,
and the
yes,
entirety of the World Wide Web.
It's the only comparison I understand based on my life experiences. I'll say that if you were trying to say that, like, stop policing the highlights of a big knockout afterwards, like, let the whole world put out the GIFs on the internet because that's the best advertising for someone to come back to your product. I get that argument. I don't necessarily get yours. And if I really had to take all the jokes aside and really look at this, what Dana and company are probably going to do is he probably got off, right? Dana probably got his rocks off on that 4-minute video. He certainly did, trashing the media, trashing me, trashing a lot of people. And why do you have to go victory lap on our buddy Josh Gross? Leave the guy alone already, all right? And I think that he's probably like, oh, I'll do the same now to the Pirates. Not I'll put out a video of them, but let's spend money and grab a few of them and pursue them to the full damn extent of the law and then publicize the arrest so as to make a major warning to everyone else that if you pirate us, you know, I'll come after you. I'll put you on the screen. I'll put your life history on the screen. Maybe he'll do that a few times. Luke, I mean, what's the argument that you know, losing 30% of your potential business is good? How is that a good argument, Luke?
Because I don't think they're losing 30% of your potential business. I'm not talking about losing. I mean, if you're talking about losing 3 out of every 10 viewers, yeah, of course that's untenable. I mean, that's... I would never advocate for such a thing. I don't know exactly what the number is. I suspect it's single digits, right? The question is, it's always about this. For example, if you have a crime in your neighborhood, right? So if you have police in your neighborhood, crime goes down, you live there 10 years, you never have a break-in, no one ever steals anything from your porch, whatever the case, your kids can walk to school, right? This is a pretty safe way to live. Now, is all crime eliminated from that neighborhood? No. And so what would it take to eliminate all crime from that neighborhood? Literally every form of crime. It would take the amount of extra effort to get that extra benefit would be onerous. There'd be constitutional rights concerns. Could a city even afford that extra? What I'm pointing out is at that point, it's just not worth going to that extra mile. My thought is there is probably a segment for very savvy internet users to avoid detection, a very small group who can get the UFC product for free, become fans, still spread the word and gospel, contribute financially in other ways, buy tickets to shows, blah, 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 whatever they may do, where they're not hurting the UFC business in any kind of meaningful way. It's not a meaningfully sized group. And the extra effort it would take for the UFC to police them, it's just not really worth it. You're still making all the money that you basically would otherwise make. I think that's my argument for that very, 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 very narrow subset of piracy.
I can't tell if you just tried to make a case for the gentrification of MMA at pay-per-view piracy or not. I'm not that educated, so I can't tell. But I think that was probably a great point, Luke.
At some point, I just feel like, you know, and I'm not saying we're there. I don't know enough to say we are. But my feeling is on some level, leaving well enough alone is probably better than just trying to, like, I'm going to fucking slash and burn the entire internet on my way to get something. It's like some piracy probably is not that big a deal. That's all I'm saying. All right, BC. We were going to do some predictions for 2021. We should have done them on Monday, but we don't plan these shows very effectively. So we're going to do it today on Wednesday. Big prediction.
One big prediction for 2021 in combat
one
sports?
One big prediction for MMA for 2021, BC. Give me your big prediction.
Oh, luckily I picked MMA. I didn't know it was MMA only. Luke, here's my big prediction. I think you could make a strong case in terms of trying to forecast who's going to have the best year, who could potentially be your fighter of the year. Adesanya's in play with the chance to become a champ and maybe get closer to a Jon Jones super fight. Obviously, Conor McGregor's in play if he comes back and beats Poirier and can win the UFC lightweight title. But how about this? How about this bold prediction? We're going to have a different champ to close 2021. And I've seen her Instagram page. It's Valentina Shevchenko.
Mm.
What about this, Luke? What if she faces the only remaining really difficult potential challenge in her division to open the year against former strawweight champ Jessica Andrade? What if she wins that? And what if she gets that trilogy bout with Amanda Nunes? Because both are going to be out of, you know, I mean, Amanda Nunes is already out of opponents, right? And, you know, Valentina's maybe got one big name left. So if you put them together for a third fight and you do it at 135 pounds, I just feel like we've already seen the best of Amanda, but yet Valentina is still kind of getting better. And I think this whole turn, considering before she moved down to flyweight, she came as close as you can possibly come to beating the greatest of all time in Amanda Nunes in a great 5-round tactical fight that really was a coin flip. First fight, also close at UFC 196. Valentina came on a little bit too late, had a huge third round, would have benefited from championship rounds there. What if they did it again? And I'm just not seeing the same, Amanda, who's been challenged and who has destroyed people and who's spent more time at 45 lately, who would have to cut down to 35 for this big one. Yet we've seen Valentina go down to flyweight, become an absolute destroyer. Luke, as a bantamweight, because of her size differential, she had to be a counter-punching machine. She had to be strategic. She had to outpoint Holly Holm over five rounds, right? She had to really be like that. At flyweight, she's learned more how to be in her natural weight and be a destroyer. If she's a little bit more offensive, think how close she came in that second fight against Amanda. I like her chances in a third fight. I think she can win this bantamweight title. I think she can also, with that win, have a hipster argument. Won't have the same resume as Amanda, but have a hipster argument for being the greatest of all time in this short season that women's MMA has been at the highest level. There's a lot of potential here for Valentina to have a monstrous year and not just be stuck in monotonous title defenses every quarter against whoever is next in line.
That's interesting. I'll say this, BC. I would be very surprised if we get through 2021. Now, this is assuming that they remain active. And both John Jones and Amanda Nunes win all their fights. I'd be very surprised. And you're always like, oh, who would beat them? Well, in Jones's case, I mean, I think he has some pretty reasonable threats. I don't think it's crazy to say that, you know, those guys, Francis or Stipe, whoever, are genuine threats to beat him. And, you know, whether you think he's going to win or not. But it's this is a lesson I've learned in MMA. It's like, the best, the very best, eventually collapse in ways that when you wrote their collapse in your mind, it never looked that way. It was much more sudden, and it was much more authoritative than you ever imagined. Even GSP beating Johnny Hendricks, for example, like, I didn't think he did. I thought Hendricks won that. I thought Hendricks won that pretty cleanly. And, you know, he walked out of that cage, you know, barely on his feet. It was more on his hands and his knees, certainly metaphorically. But more to the point, like, you know, did I see him losing to Matt Serra? Never. Never in a million years. Or pick anything. You know, Ronda Rousey losing to Holly Holm. It makes sense in hindsight, but certainly going into that fight, there was hardly anybody who thought, you know, Holly Holm had a shot. You could pick any really upset, Chris Weidman over Anderson Silva, or you name it. These things
even Robbie
come.
Robbie Lawler getting knocked out by Woodley. I was like, what? You know,
exactly.
Like
that was. And it happens suddenly, and it happens in ways you never expect, and it happens, you know, where, like, there's no question about it. And so to me, it's like John Jones is approaching, not quite there. He's still in his early 30s, but he's going to get close to his mid-30s as the year progresses. I think he'll be 34 this year. I have to double-check that. I think that his defense is tremendous, but I think his offense is not nearly what it once was. In the case of Amanda Nunes, she is so far ahead of her competitors, but, you know, can she maintain the level of enthusiasm she needs to stay on top? I thought Duran Demi was giving her problems, that, you know, Amanda's well-roundedness saved her, but how many times can you pull that rabbit out of that hat? You know, she's got money now. She's got a kid now. Again, are these declarations to you that I can pick the day that it's going to happen? No. But I just feel like there's enough reason to think that that dominance, it's so hard to maintain. This might be the year that some of that begins to unravel.
It's interesting. Although I liked everything you said except for the John Jones losing at heavyweight.
Look, even if he wins his first one and becomes champion, right? So let's say he beats Stipe. Stipe wins and he beats Stipe or something.
No, I get your point. Francis can beat anybody at any time. And also, right, you know, time will catch up. You can't be perfect for so long, right? And John has been Teflon.
Who is a boxer that you just revered as a fan? Not as a media guy, but as a fan. And when their collapse came, it shocked you.
Roy Jones Jr. is the greatest example of this because he fell off a cliff, right? It was the knockout loss to Tarver in the rematch where you're like, oh my God. But there were factors, right? The weight cut coming back down from heavyweight, not as motivated, blah, blah, blah. But then when he fought Glenn Johnson and got hammered, you're like, he might be done. And then he fought Tarver a third time and was just sluggish and not into it. Yeah, that was just like, I can't believe that happened. And it was over like that. And yeah, he lingered for another 20 years, but you get my point. I mean, it was over, right?
Right. All right. So for my big prediction, I'm going to say this, and I wrote this on CBS Sports as well, but I think it's worth repeating here. You know, I'm saying this in a very speculative way, but I just feel like the stars are aligning a little bit, where I'm going to say that 2021 is going to be Bellator's best year since 2015. Now, why would I say it on those terms? Well, 2014 was the first year that Scott Coker took over. But if you recall, he took over, I think, late in that year from Bjorn Rebney. It was not his first full year. 2015 was the first full year that Scott Coker had in terms of control of Bellator. And that was the year where they began to roll out Bellator kickboxing, which I think had some success overseas. But again, I don't really know how much of a product there is for kickboxing outside of what, you know, goes on in parts of Southeast Asia and in Europe. But more to the point, they had the Dynamite event where they were sort of borrowing from the Japanese side of things. They had fostered relationships with some of the Japanese promotions to have kind of a talent-sharing agreement. It was a big, bold resetting of the Bellator brand. And some of that, in fact, a lot of it, I don't think didn't work because it felt a little dated. Like you were trying to bring back stuff that it wasn't necessarily a time-honored practice. It was a practice that worked at a certain point in time. But I have to say, if you're looking around now, it does feel a little bit different. There's been a lot of turnover in their roster, both coming and going. But they've got a lot of interesting pieces. They've got a lot of youth happening across many divisions. We talked about Logan Storley Nemkov and their incredible bout. Joey Davis and AJ McKee. And you can go on through the roster. They're really developing the women's side of the game. And we saw that with even Alayma McFarland's last fight, which she lost. But still, sort of beginning to show the development that they have been in process. Plus, we talk about all of their signings where you have Anthony Rumble Johnson and Yoel Romero and blah, blah, blah. I mean, so many different pieces. Plus, even I think they have a claim to have the best light heavyweight on earth as well. Like they've got this ground up, top down thing that is really beginning to mature to something, to a much more stable, recognizable product. Then on top of that, you add what I think is going to be Viacom really kind of leaning into it. Now, what that's going to look like, I don't exactly know. I don't know if they're going to end up on Showtime. I don't know if they're going to end up on CBS. I don't know exactly if they're going to move off Thursdays on CBS Sports and go to Saturdays. But I just feel like with all of the investments and development that they have had and seeing what that looks like, and UFC going back to ABC, I have a hunch that I don't know when, I don't know what it's going to look like, BC, but I have a feeling you're going to see a Bellator show on a bigger kind of broadcast, let's call it situation, than you did previously. DAZN was interesting because it gave them some money, but that relationship never really matured. I tend to think that sticking with just the Viacom CBS side of things is probably going to be better for their overall visibility when they have something worth really sharing with the product. They're not going to look to play the old Japanese style playbook. They're going to play a modern game with a modern updated roster full of young guns, full of some recognizable names. I don't know, man. I got a feeling that, like, I don't know how successful it's going to be, but I feel like this is going to be the first year in a while where Bellator really has a bunch of interesting things going on aside from the tournament. I mean, from a visibility standpoint.
Yeah, I think it's right. I think if you're Scott Coker, you have more diverse tools and toys to play with in this moment than just like old name over here, hoping this young guy works out. I mean, the fact that, you know, arguably the face of their franchise historically, Michael Chandler, they kind of let him walk. The fact that they were able to do that and not really miss a beat and look and say, you know, we've got different and for our circumstances, better guys to invest in, you know, when you consider someone's marketability with their ability inside the cage. It's an interesting time for sure to be, you know, in the spot they are looking to carve out their own niche in the greater sphere of things MMA. These were big gets from Romero to Rumble. Right. And those aren't even really the core reasons if you're Bellator to be excited. I mean, but I think the success of the Grand Prix of late have shown that it can be a more fun one, like the heavyweight one, which is about names, or you can do like they're doing right now with the featherweight one, where you're seeing some of the best in the world at that weight class take place. So, yeah, I think that's a good point. Me wearing this fantastic long sleeve black T-shirt, notwithstanding our relationship with the promotion due to our parent company, notwithstanding, I think we obviously can put that aside and just say things are looking up heading into 2021. It'd be fun to see what happens.
Oh, I mean, don't get me wrong. There's still going to be plenty of Bellator slander here on the show. It's just I do think that what they've lined up is they're poised for something big. They're poised for something big. Now, who's that with? What's it going to look like? Hell, your guess is as good as mine on that one. I just don't know, but with all the talent they've signed, with all the talent they're developing, Rich Chow's done a really good job. I'm expecting you know, there was a lot of Bellator shows that felt like were good last year, but that maybe folks just, it just happened. It was just the bus going by. It was nothing, anything in particular. I think they're going to do a little bit more of the dressing up of the content in 2021. So we'll see what that looks like.
The timing makes sense because, you know, we're seeing UFC cuts at a fairly rapid rate, and they're coming from, you know, fairly big name people. And look, you can understand why a Yoel Romero would get cut, giving age and what have you. It was surprising, but I guess in theory you can understand it. But, you know, can Bellator become not just a viable free agent landing for guys who are still in their prime, but, you know, a destination because of some of the limitations that we've talked about, you know, Reebok deal, stuff like that. And just sort of the way you're treated. I mean, like, look, you know, I'm not a fighter. I don't know if it's better to be in the UFC or Bellator. I do know that Scott Coker doesn't trash his fighters publicly, right? So, you know, there's certain guys that are looking for more of a family experience, Luke, and more of a, you know, a different style of treatment. And it's certainly out there for them.
All right. Well, with that in mind, BC, it's time for the viewers, the listeners to give back. It's time for fan submissions, is it not?
Yeah, please. We've got mail, Luke. All right, let's play the animalization of this animation. All right, Luke, we know it's morningcombat@gmail.com is the landing spot. You can also slide into my DMs. Sean K going to kick off our fan submission of the week. He's saying, look, Luke,
hey,
we're going to start this off with a bang, and all you international girlfriends, take note. This is from Sean K. My fiance Jennifer O'Neill is a very casual MMA fan, but every Monday night here in Dublin, we sit on the couch and watch Have You Seen This Shit? She absolutely loves it and thinks it's hilarious. Without me knowing, she took note of your merchandise info, and on Christmas morning, I opened up a present to find this epic jumper here. Jumper? What kind of UK talk is that? She even had to set up a...
If he's Irish, it's not the UK, but okay.
Maybe he's Northern Ireland. No, he's from Dublin. All right. She even had to set up a P.O. box in America to get it shipped from there to Dublin, Ireland. You're right. Not part of the UK. Send your dead wrong stuff to me. Shout out here to Sean K, his lovely fiance, Jennifer O'Neill. She also added... BC looks like a great guy, huge hog, credit to his community. Wow. Didn't see that coming, Luke. But, you know, I will say he circumvented the system, and he looks great for it. He looks fantastic in that jumper, okay?
He circumcised the situation. It looks great.
Yes. Yes, I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend. Okay, Luke, moving on. Oh, we need to... Mikey here says we need to give Jennifer O'Neill a huge shout-out because not only does she pretend to enjoy our show to make her fiancé happy, she's also a frontline worker who had to postpone her wedding this year. So big shouts out to Jennifer there.
Thanks to all those folks, yeah.
Absolutely. No jokes there. Bob M is next, Luke. He says, what's up, guys? The name is Bob, and I got some cool stuff, including a Morning Combat t-shirt. And also, my older brother forgot my gift, so he gave me his bag of goods. You guys are the best. Tip to tip forever.
Is that a bag of weed?
Oh, that's what he's referencing. Okay, so for anyone who can't see this, there's a Pantera t-shirt, a Cannibal Corpse t-shirt, a Morning Combat t-shirt, and about an eighth of an ounce, Luke. Yeah.
That's enough to get us high as shit.
Yes, yes it is. The room service diaries have never been better after hanging out with Bob M., I'll tell you that much. Luke, what do you think of his choice of paraphernalia here?
I mean, it looks like my closet, to be quite honest with you, weed and all. Yeah. This is great. This is great. I love it.
All right. Our next submission does not have a name. It's anonymously delivered. It says, this guy didn't leave us a name, but he said, I ordered a bathroom for work, and look what we got. If you zoom in, it says, welcome, donks, to the MK throne.
Oh, whoa! That is amazing.
We made it, Luke. We made it. Yes.
Dude, on the inside of a port-a-john is where our constitution will be written.
Wow. Do you think... this is a setup, though? The guy who sent it in also wrote it? Or do you think this is like a random, you know, circumstance?
I think it's probably the guy wrote it, but it doesn't matter because now everyone else has to see it. So who cares?
Yeah. Everyone else has to try to sit on the MK throne. You know, it's not easy up here. Okay.
Dude, you ever looked at a port-a-john? You ever been to like a summer concert and then you're like, damn, I got to pee. And then you go in there and you look down at the Civil War bandages that get thrown down there. Dude, there's blood and piss and like just stacks of shit. You just can't believe what comes out of people with those things.
Yeah. I once went to Bonnaroo, Luke, in 2005. And I took a crap the first day, and I don't know, 104 degree weather as you're just dripping, and the smells are just. I held that thing for the next 6 days, Luke. I couldn't do it. That was the worst. That was bad. Yeah, thank you. Great show though, right? Great show.
Hemorrhoid, blood, all kinds of stuff.
Whew. All right. Hey, Connor F is next, and he says, I would have sent a picture of me with some merch, but I don't know the cheat code to unlock it in Ireland. So, Luke, he sent in this nice, I got something in my eye. This nice shut the F up, Jay meme, of course, from what the hell is that movie? It's
Big Lebowski.
Big Lebowski. There you go. Thank you. Is that me as the dude right there? That's fantastic.
You are the dude. You are Jeff Daniels. It's what's his name?
Bridges, yeah, and Luke, of course, as Big John Goodman there. Yeah, okay, great. All right, moving on here, Luke. We got two of them from a guy named Dave E, whose handle is @thedaves_666. So he's certainly a man after your own barren soul. And Dave E says on the first one, Luke, here's is the lost Christmas card that went with Luke's amazing Christmas gift. This is fantastic, Luke.
Dong, parental advisory, dongs galore. And so this is someone's dong hitting me in the face, and this is the picture I had when I had nose surgery about a year ago.
It's Dana's dong. If you look close, that's Dana in the background.
And you're the tip of the spear?
I'm the tip of Dana's dong. Are we really dissecting? This is really our job. We're dissecting this artwork.
This is, dude, CBS Sports pays us to look at dicks that you're on.
Yeah, so I guess Dana has bludgeoned your nose with the tip of his dong, which looks a lot like me, Luke. So that's a vulgar display of combat indeed. Dave comes back with a second one. He says, this second one is a meme Brian texted me but didn't want Luke to see.
I put the live chat off of my own channel and I put it on the MK channel. Y'all can just absolutely L my B's, if you know what I'm saying.
That's great work, Dave, by the way. I think that was supposed to be the Luke Thomas Sunday Digest, you go. All right. Yeah. Great. Hey, Todd M is back in the next one. He takes Luke and BC to Flavor Town with this one. Stay frosted.
Dude, I look like a much fatter version. Jesus Christ, I look terrible here.
Look at my hand. It's got the onion rings as fingers. That is Guy Fieri in the house. Fantastic.
I look like I manage Insane Clown Posse.
No, dude, you look like the lead singer of Smash Mouth. Yeah.
Somebody once told me.
Oh, man, I hate that band. Hey, that first hit they had, remember Walking on the Sun? Not that bad, right?
Might as well be walking on the sun.
All right. The next one from Anya Bari is back, and he's his name is Scott in real life, and he has made Brian's newest album, Lonely at the Top. And
I get the Lonely at the Top reference, but what is on the actual album cover?
Dana White standing at the top of the cliff of Wyoming Bay as the sun's going down.
Me? Are you shitting me, dude? That is so good. Wow. Wow.
Oh, God, I need this as a poster. That is fantastic.
Dude, that is one of the most clever ones we've gotten. That is very funny.
Yeah, that is great. Great stuff there. Wow. That's some meta on meta web scream type shit right there. That is well freaking done. Yes. Wow. Thank you. All right, Kevin L. is back, and he's got an idea for BC's Sunday Digest.
So what, hot dogs, curly fries, taquitos, and two raw eggs. The only thing that's fucked up about this is that the eggs should have been still inside the plastic bag.
Yes, yes, yes. Wow, nice grillers on there. What is that red spot on my chest, Gaff? What is that? Is that my heart?
I think that's the blood that just sort of oozes out of your nose. From acid
stain?
Reflux or something.
Oh, that is well freaking done right there. These people go to the ends of the earth to find that. That picture's from a now canceled show, PBC Face to Face. All about that in LA at the Fox Studios. Remember when I used to cash that check, Luke?
I think that's how you got COVID.
No, that was a long time ago. I probably got COVID. Oh, you know what? I know. I think I got COVID from that weekend you and I spent in Brooklyn for the Showtime fight.
I didn't get COVID then. Or maybe, you know what? Maybe I actually have had COVID. I just didn't know it. I don't know.
Maybe you gave it to me. Maybe you were asymptomatic and you gave it to me and I was patient zero. Okay.
Maybe. But if that was the case, I would be patient zero. But okay.
Or just a big zero. All right. Hey, Scott M. Rizzo is a fine contributor to this channel. He's pretty upset that we named WebScream the Donk of the Year. So he made a nice little meme here, Luke.
I can't quite see what he's doing on the bottom one.
He's put up the picture of Kanye West interrupting Taylor Swift to say that.
Unedited?
To say that Beyonce had the best video that year. You know that reference?
Oh, yeah, but I'm saying the bottom one is unedited other than the hold my beer part?
Yeah, that's him. That's him jumping in to say, sorry, WebScream, okay. Scott M. Rizzo had
I know, I get the reference. I just couldn't tell if the photo was manipulated in any way.
No. The joke is pretty straight up, Luke. It's unadulterated, unfiltered. It's right in your face. All right.
Okay. All right.
Hey, let's move on to Matt S. Matt the Smith. Smith says, WebScream, you're taking everything I worked for. I want my edits to be chosen over your effing ass. You know who makes the real money edits? The real money edits come from me. And he has a Home Alone meme with Jay as Macaulay. And it says, he's been in their ear. Now they're in his house. Shut up, Jay. With you and I as the wet bandits. Luke, this is brilliant.
Dude, so you're Joe Pesci, and I'm the guy that, like, steps on the nail.
Yeah, the Daniel Stern, the voice of the Wonder Years. Yes, yes.
I got to tell you, I think that's a very appropriate grouping.
Wow. They know us better than we do, Luke. This is incredible.
They really
Matt
do.
The Smith. Wow, well done, Matt S. Woo! All right, now it's time for at Omniscient 12B. He goes by the name JT. He's got a trio of movie posters, Luke. Here's the first one, a play on the Travolta Cage face-off. It's tip-off, Luke. In order to trap him, he must go tip-to-tip.
Tip-off. We would replace the bell ends of our with each other. That sounds really gross.
Yeah, that's pretty gross. JT comes back with another one, Luke. This is more pro wrestling style. I like this. The mega powers of Randy Macho Man Campbell and racist Hulk Thomas over there. I love it. Love it.
How come I got to be the one that drops the N-word? That's not fair.
Well, you like to make sex tapes with your best friend's wives. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense there.
Okay. In that case, I get it.
The Mega Powers is the greatest pro wrestling story ever told. If you don't know the reference, the storyline heading into, of course, WrestleMania 5, the full year storyline. Love it. And Luke, it's probably apt. This is probably apropos a preview of you and I. We don't know who the Miss Elizabeth will be to break up our Mega Powers union here of taking over the fight talk sphere, but it will end very badly for us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is Jay Miss Elizabeth?
He might be. I don't think he tears us apart. He just tears our soul out, our patience out. Let's go to JT with his final one. This is a play on the movie Predator. Another play on the movie Predator, Luke.
Look at you.
A little bit of a copycat job there on the previous stuff that WebScream's put out. But
it did, but he added the nice update as you as the Predator. It works.
Yes. And you know, we got to close this segment, Luke, with Dickles. He's back and he's got something called Basketball Dads. It says it's a new show I'm pitching. It's a twist on Basketball Wives. Except this twist is 40-year-old white dads staying active in an effort to hold on to their youth. It stars Brian Chunky Milk Campbell. And here's hoping CBS picks it up. Let's watch this for the first time. Here we go.
Ha 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 Dude, I'm telling you, Dickles is doing something special out there.
Oh, my God, that is so true. Tuesday nights, once COVID ends, you'll be seeing me with that same free throw. Wow. Oh, my God, that was great, Luke. That is it for your fan submissions. If you want to join this party of rejects, morningcombat@gmail.com. Also, you can hit me up on the old IG and Twitter DMs. You can see our handles later in the show. There it is. All right.
Good job with that. These get better and better every week, dude. I am very impressed. I did not know how much of a culture there would be. But, dude, photoshopping and MMA memeing, that's been around since, like, MMA.TV, you know, the original mixedmartialarts.com. It's
how
a
about
huge
Cali's
part.
Theme song, too. When you wake up and it's life that has won, you'll fist fight with your dream. Nobody has topped that yet, Luke.
No, not yet. All right, let's see. If you would like to try Showtime, you certainly can. Showtime.com/nothing. Just go to Showtime.com. Get a 30-day free trial. If you like it, you can keep it. If not, pound sand. There is also our merch, store.show.com.
I got a merch question for you, Luke. Do I just have a really large head, or does this hat just not look good on me?
See, I'm not the right person to ask because we both have large melons, and it doesn't look good on my head either. But my wife put it on, and it looked great for her. So if you have a normal mammalian brain and a normal mammalian head, you should be fine. If you are an ogre like me or a mutant like Brian, not the choice of apparel for you. So there's that. Okay, as he mentioned, you want to send in anything for the show, submission for, you know, fan submissions, a question, something for Friday's Dead Wrong, morningcombat@gmail.com is the place to be. And in fact, we are all over social media. Beyond that, it's going to be Morning Combat everywhere on YouTube, on Gmail, on Instagram, because email's not social media, but you get the idea. It's just Morning Combat consistently. BC and I are both on Twitter and Instagram, but our names there differ a little bit. Take a screenshot and then give us a follow, if you so please. And Friday we'll do Dead Wrong. We'll react to the latest news and notes. There are no big fights this weekend, so we'll kind of get creative, a little bit fun with it, I think, for Friday's show. But after that, all the fights start kicking into high gear, so Friday's show will be the last sort of funnish one for a while.
We should call up Chuck on Friday. I haven't talked to, like, I know that we should probably do a welfare wellness check on Chuck and, you know, behind the scenes and make it more personal. Why don't we just cold call him on Friday's show and do it as ridiculous as we can? I love that man.
Right? I love that idea. I'm down for that. Let's do it. That'd be great.
I'll text him in advance and say, keep the hat on though. All right.
All right. We'll do that. I think I've got everything, all the plugs I need in there. So appreciate everybody watching. Take care of each other. Be safe. Come back for Friday, 11 a.m. That is Brian Campbell. I'm Luke Thomas. For everyone at Showtime, Malka, CBS Sports, and the like, we'll see you Friday. Until then, may all of your gains be loyal.